So I was the only one that thought that the instrumental fanfare as the Lombardi Trophy was headed onto the field was eerily reminiscent of the theme from the original Battlestar Galactica, right? I mean, it was definitely just me. Anyway, we're talking about Star Trek Discovery. Star Trek Weekly starts now.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
That's right. It's already a better show because it has sitar music. Welcome to Star Trek Weekly. I'm Christian Blatt. You can find me online at ChristianDMZ. Joined, as almost always, except for when she's gallivanting around Park City, Utah, Caroline.
Or other places.
but usually that.
Well, yeah. Well, I got another one, too. So, you know. Yeah. My name is Carrie Lane. You can find me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's K-A-R-I-D-L-A-N-E.
And I'm Frank Brandon. You follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Happy Go Jackie.
We should just get the Mirror Universe version.
I know. It just seems to happen that way.
But that'll be like the you in like a full suit of armor.
Yeah. No, somebody's like, you should cosplay that. I'm like, that'd be kind of cool. They're all nice outfits.
Expensive outfits, but nice outfits.
Well, it'd be interesting to figure out how you'd make it.
Yeah. Anyway, we're here to talk about Star Trek Discovery Episode 14, The War Without... The War Within, which is why we're listening to George Harrison and the Beatles, Within You, Without You. Little clever wordplay there. You know, I could have gotten You Two With or Without You, but this is a much better song. Anyway, we've got a lot to talk about in this episode. And, you know, just last week I was saying that I felt like they never really dialed back the budget on any of the episodes. It was just spend. And put the brakes on it because this is the one where they're like, we got to hold money back for the finale. Because if they don't go down to the planet and do that cool, like, let's, you know, accelerate the spore growth, it would have basically all been people in rooms talking, you know, which is, there's a lot of that in Star Trek, don't get me wrong. But I thought that this was great. This was a very good character building episode, some very different, cool interactions we saw, which we'll kind of go through. But on the whole, what did you think, Carrie, of this episode?
Yeah, this one wrapped up some other loose ends and put people in interesting predicaments of like, all right, cool, so we cannot tell anybody that this happened.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, okay.
Okay, well, now we got to tell, like, the Admiral.
Yeah, and then just, like, having to figure that out of who... Then I wondered who they thought they were, because they're like, we saw Discovery blown up, so who are you? And it was still exciting, though, and the reveals of, no, really, he's dead. And then she's like, oh.
No. Yeah. Frank, overall thoughts on this episode?
I mean, interesting, because I know that we had speculated, hey, what was the Terran Discovery getting up to while they were in our universe? And it turns out to be really not much.
They wanted to immediately shut the door on that.
Yep. They're just like, nope. Sorry, guys. You're done about that.
Didn't do anything. Yeah. You know what they did? They blew up.
That's true.
Yeah.
But for this, I mean, I know it reminiscent of like old Next Generation battle episodes. I mean, this was fine. There were some nice scene beats between characters, so that I did not mind the lack of a lot of visual panache in this episode.
And, I mean, they were moving along at a pretty frenetic pace the last few episodes, so it's good to catch our breath because you get the feeling that they're going to literally go out with a bang or several hundred, you know, in the course of the season finale.
Yeah, and of course, like after last week with Lorca dying, there were articles and interviews with Jason Isaacs and... people would ask him, is that it? Because what about the prime Lorca? Or, you know, nobody knows exactly what happened to him. And he at least says, like, this is my last time. I'm really sad to be with these actors. I had a great time with these people. But he says, but I'm also going to never tell you the truth about what I know about prime Lorca. Mm-hmm. So who knows if we might ever see the prime Lorca again? I feel like that is definitely a trigger that could...
There's no reason to tie up that loose end, you know, just like Mirror Burnham.
Yes.
You know, it's an interesting prospect, and, you know, if it doesn't fit into the story next week, which it seems like it wouldn't, let's go ahead and save those, you know? Like, don't close the door on some possible great storytelling.
Because I would think if Burnham's pursuit was to find a Terran Lorca, Terran Burnham, that if Prime Lorca has any connections with Terran Lorca, I'm sure it's his craftiness and ingenuity. So why not just dial into that dark side and just pretend to be Terran Lorca and just hang out with Terran Burnham? And they could be just gallivanting around in that universe.
That's
until you can find a way to get out of there.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'd love to see it, but who knows? It could just be one of those things that, you know, the show's on for 5 years, and then you start to think, like, hey, whatever happened to that?
That's true, yep.
Anyway, so it sort of, like, right away, as we were saying, it sort of addressed some of the things that we were talking about last week. There's almost immediately an exchange with Emperor Georgiou and Lieutenant Saru, who she, of course, tells to bow, slave. And, you know, they had just recently been eating the entrails of, you know, one of his relatives. So it's funny just because we were just like, oh, man, that's going to be an awkward moment. And he's just like, no, I guess we're probably delicious. I don't know.
But I, like how he got irritated at Burnham a little bit. I thought you said there was none of my kind there. It's like, understand what she was trying to do.
I think he does understand.
They do.
Yeah.
Like,
but you're right.
He does a good, he rightfully should call her out. And then she's like, no, really, this wasn't a good time to talk about it. And I didn't want to say it this way. Okay, moving on.
Yeah, and then he, Saru goes on to, you know, suggesting that it might help Tyler if Burnham goes to see him, and he's sort of taken aback when she asks, is that an order? You know, because I don't really want to see him. And I thought that that was sort of an interesting thing throughout the episode, that, you know, first Cadet Tilly and then you know, some of the other characters were pretty quick to be like, bah, you're our pal Tyler, that's all right, you killed the doctor, and there's some Klingons still somewhere in you, maybe
he didn't try to kill them directly.
Yeah, oh no, it makes sense that, you know, Burnham was like, yeah they all accepted you, you know, I'm the one you tried to kill. But I just thought that you know, they were all pretty quick. That scene in the commissary where they're just all like pretty chummy, and like I thought it was just going to be him and Tilly sitting there awkwardly.
Well, maybe they're easier at accepting the idea that it literally was two different people. Like, he isn't who that person was. And some people, that would be easy, that they go, okay, that's fine, you weren't them. But then other people would look at him and just be like, you are that person. Even if you're not doing those things, that's all they're going to see every time they look at you.
Yeah.
So.
Were you surprised at all, Frank?
I still don't know exactly if I can understand the whole process of how we got Tyler and Vok into one person. I mean, some parts were cut up from.
They're talking about like shaving down your fingers and then, you know, breaking bones. And I'm like, okay, well then, what exactly are you doing? Because I guess Klingons are bigger than humans, so you got to make them smaller.
But like,
did they fit?
Did they
just keep Tyler's flesh?
Yeah,
and then just compact. Vok's skeleton?
They've definitely
and then draped
not
him over
done
that?
A good job explaining
well,
that.
Well, no, that was a nice side. Like, how do we do that? Well, we won't know until we understand the technology behind it. And you're like, okay.
All right, sure. Yeah, but, I mean, at least, you know, the one thing I wanted to say is, like, we understand why, at least in the original series, they don't know anything about the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's the sort of good exposition that Star Trek requires, which is, yeah, how come we don't know, because we're not allowed to talk about it ever, even though, you know, this many, everyone on the crew kind of knows about it.
Yeah.
But. It was a good explanation, though, because, that totally makes sense. If you lost someone important to you that... There might be another version out there. Yes, it's not the same one. Wouldn't matter. Someone grieving, they would still want to get them.
Yeah, and I mean, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, it's sort of one of the principal points of the series Fringe is just doing exactly that. So,
but if you guys had lost somebody that you really cared about, and you heard there's another parallel universe, but it was pretty much everybody over there kind of leaned on like the more evil or nastier characteristics of humanity. Would you still want to go over there and try to retrieve that person that you've lost?
But they don't know that. Like, random people.
Okay, that's just
true. Yeah, but
they wouldn't know.
They wouldn't know. But and even if you told them, they'd still be like, doesn't matter. Because they haven't experienced it firsthand.
I can think of the one scenario where I would, which is what happened to Burnham, which is it's my fault that somebody died. So I'm like, well, I kind of don't want this other one to die too, because it's kind of also my fault. Like, I'll be there at both of the, you know. But it is kind of an interesting point that's why you're, you know, it's just like, no, we got to, you know, keep this as quiet as possible, because all of a sudden everybody's going to want to go over to the other side. I thought that was, jump ahead for a second, that was kind of an interesting moment between Admiral Cornwall and Emperor Georgiou, which is you know, even if we wanted to get you back, I don't know if we know how to, you know,
yeah.
It was like,
it was an accident. They got there in the first place.
Well, it wasn't really an accident. It was an accident, but it was an accident that was entirely manufactured by Mira Lorca.
Yeah.
So like he, you know, made sure that they did it. But, yeah, you had to do the like 33 jumps beforehand. So, obviously there's a lot of work. And as we talked about last week, it was definitely a little bit of a letdown that we didn't really get more about the Defiant going over there. You know, they just kept talking about it. So yeah. We're going to get something out of this, all right? And we still haven't. And now I'm starting to think we might not. but back to Tyler for a moment, because I put this in my notes. He introduced the term, which I liked, species reassignment protocol, which is what they said was done.
Yes.
And that he was kind of the test subject.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've theorized this before on the show, or at least I have. And so if you're in the chat right now, let us know. Or even if you're watching after the fact, comment on YouTube. Do you think that this is ultimately the explanation for the more humanoid looking Klingons like we see in Trouble with Tribbles amongst many original series episodes? Or is it something else? So, I mean, we've talked about it before, but I wanted to include people in the chat. We've got some great people in the chat, like we always do, despite the fact that it's really late and it's Super Bowl Sunday. So there's like two reasons
yeah.
that people could be sleeping.
I think people would do it more if it became more streamlined instead of this agonizing
right.
process to do it. Because, yeah, sure, why not? And then if they, like they said, they started out as more of like a spy position and then went on. But the question, too, is like, how much does that change who you are, that if you had offspring, would they be adjusted to? You know?
Well, I feel like they probably wouldn't, only in the way that, like, you know.
How different does your DNA change?
Yeah, but I mean, if you lose your leg in the war, that's not going to be something that you pass on.
They're not just changing their leg, though.
Well, that's true. They are changing the DNA.
Everything.
And yeah. also, Frank, though, I feel like the more humanoid Klingons, they're not really there to blend in. You know, I mean, I guess they're just there not to look so scary. So,
yeah. But then it's like, why would they? I feel like as a species, they'd want to look as scary as possible. That's mm-hmm. a great intimidation factor against an opponent.
Wellington Smith says that's why. Klingons have appropriated reassignment. They look more human now. And when's the point where they stop going through that charade? I mean, by the time we see them in Star Trek The Motion Picture, they're, you know, the Klingon, or at least closer to the Klingons that we know. So
yeah, but for
that's
somebody,
like 12 years, I think.
Yeah.
10 years.
But for somebody that, as they're, she was saying, like, we don't want to homogenize ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's the worry we have about the Federation coming into our culture. So why would the Klingons want to look more human?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. It continues to be one of the great mysteries of Star Trek for me, even though people often point out that there was an explanation given in Star Trek Enterprise. I'm not quite there. I want to know more.
Do we? Is that like a thing we need to know?
No, I just find it interesting.
Yeah.
It's hard to let go for me. anyway, we see the return of Admiral Cornwall, as I mentioned. And also Sarek. And as you were mentioning, as soon as they show up, they have to make sure that these are actually the members of Discovery.
Who would they think they are, then, if they don't really know about the Mirror World?
I think that they...
Universe.
They think that they might be just some kind of imposters. I don't think that they mm-hmm. have it as well thought out as that as of yet. Because, yeah, there was no indication that they had any sense that there was a mirror universe. Mm-hmm. So it's like, Sarek, you know, find out everything you need to know. And he's apparently, like, Sarek just gets everything, because he's like, later in the episode, he's like, so you and Tyler, huh?
Yeah, I know. Saru's dialed in, man. He had the ship's ear. He knew everything that was going on.
I mean, he was the captain.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, acting captain and, you know, he's definitely acting captain still. So, you know, and there were kind of some good moments as a result early in there, you know, sort of sharing that news, you know, the results of the mind meld, but also Cornwall just angry, the Admiral just angry that she didn't realize that the Lorca that she saw earlier this season, just not the same guy. But, you know, he did kind of freak out on her and he had weird scars, but,
yeah.
You know, I guess it's all par for the course. But... we do get the reveal that the Terran version of Discovery was destroyed by Klingons, so that sort of closed the book on that. I feel like it was a bit of a wasted opportunity. I think that it could have been like, yeah, you know, the Terran discovery was going around for a few weeks, like, you know, just killing everything in sight, and we had to stop them, you know, or something. I don't know. But either way, we wouldn't have seen it, so I guess it doesn't matter.
That's true. I mean, I feel like that's something we haven't seen too much of. I guess, like, on Deep Space Nine, where you get to see a little bit more of the Mirror Universe people kind of getting up to a lot of shenanigans. Yeah. But overall, you've never really seen something told from the point of view of the Mirror Universe entering our universe and being on an adventure. It'd be interesting to see a couple episodes kind of just stealing it from that their point of view.
Yeah, but I guess there's not enough episodes left in the season for that,
no.
So we won't get that. But you know what? Maybe there'll be a novel or something.
Yeah.
Well, actually, there is a novel out right now that
a Discovery novel.
Yes, there's a couple Discovery novels, but the current one that's out now does some backstory about Burnham and Spock, where they have some conversations, kind of explaining their history together. So it's one I'd like to read just to kind of understand a little bit more.
Well, that's something that's come up a lot, you know, on this show and just in general when people talk about Discovery. What were we going to say, Karen?
Sorry, I appreciate it. I like that moment too. Rainbow in the chat says her vaporizing the fortune cookies was one of the best parts in the episode. That was funny, like a nice cathartic, like, "Well, screw you, I'm gone."
Yeah.
Also, how she stood up to Laurel.
Yeah, that was actually one of the sort of...
A lot of people are liking that scene.
The interactions that I wanted to talk about. So let's start with that one. The Laurel and Cornwall, where, you know, she was just bluntly honest. It's like, so you're winning. And she's able to kind of appeal to, you know, Laurel's fanaticism. And it's not really religion. I don't know exactly what you call it. I mean, to her it is a religion, I guess, faith. And just be like, look, they're destroying us, but they're less unified than they were, so this can't be what you want. So in a weird way, it should appeal to her on some level, just like, you know, don't you want a unified Klingon Empire? Because this isn't doing it, you know, even though she sort of towed the line about, like, hey, you know, I think war is pretty difficult. But, Frank, what did you think of that scene? I thought that it was not an interaction that I, you know, went into the episode like, oh, we're going to get the Admiral and Laurel and, you know, it's just... But I think it worked really well in the story.
Yeah, because I think it added a lot more to the Klingon side of it. It'd be just one thing if it was like, oh, the Klingon Empire is, you know, taking over the Federation. What are we going to do to stop it? But to know that it is for all their attempts to try to become a unified Klingon Empire, that they are just as more fractious than probably they were before everything that happened with their involvement with the Federation.
Yeah, and I mean, the concept that you have 24 enemies, not one enemy, and that, you know, as Burnham points out, it's like, well, these are just completely random, just, you know, senseless acts of aggression. And the answer is, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They're very random, and it's just like, let's see who can kill more. What did you think of that scene, Carrie? The getting to see the Admiral there with Laurel. I mean, do you think that we'll see a little bit more? Maybe we'll revisit this notion next week.
Yeah, I thought it was a good. What's this? What, the prison? Like where she's talking to her?
Yeah, and it was sort of, there was like a nice, you know, acknowledgement, like, oh, so you're free, you know, you're not in prison anymore, yeah.
I thought it was a good conversation between them two, and then somebody brought it up in the chat too of the, oh, how are they surviving if they have such a fractured army? But it's like, well, they're not going to kill each other, they're just going to kill everybody else.
Yeah, exactly.
And, it's kind of the interesting almost discussion about faith of, like, is this really what your thing wants, that just random innocent people to die? And I like that she had no, like, fear talking to her as well.
Yeah, no, I thought that was great. There, before that, there was a sort of this great scene where Emperor Georgiou has everything kind of laid out to her. You know, I mentioned the moment where it's like, you know, I don't know if we could send you back if we wanted to, but just kind of explaining, like, you know, you're our guest. You can't really go anywhere, but
make her comfy.
Yeah. And then just sort of this whole idea that she's going to be around, which as we see a little bit later, which is why I wanted to bring it up now.
Yeah,
we see a little bit later that it turns out to be sort of a useful tool that they have there.
Totally fake that hair, though.
It took 14 episodes, but I finally, because of a scene later in the episode, I finally at least got it to stick enough that I put it in my notes. The woman on the bridge that has the metal,
yes.
Detmer is her name.
Yes.
And that did take me 14 episodes. I'd heard it said before, but this was the time that it stuck.
She was so excited to see Philippa.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Quote unquote,
now,
Philippa.
Do you, this is my question about that, and that is the end of the episode. But since it came up now, do you think that there has to be like sort of rank and file members of the crew that were just along for the ride, following orders, didn't know. What maybe didn't even know they went to a parallel universe, and some level maybe they excuse me, maybe everybody needed to, but are there people that don't know that that's just Giorgio from the mirror universe? I mean, the people on the bridge are the ones that are going to be most likely to know that, or they should, but I mean I guess there's no reason for them to know other than Saru and the one guy in engineering, and then, of course, the Admiral and Sarek, etc. There's no reason for them to know that she came over, I guess. But to me, I just thought everybody would know that that's who it was if she randomly shows up. Or I don't know. Am I crazy, Frank?
No, I would think even if you didn't know all the ins and outs of what happened for the bigger picture while you're in the mirror universe, you would have to think at least you knew that Giorgio was dead in the Prime universe. That much you knew. So all of a sudden, if Giorgio just pops back up and you haven't been anywhere but the mirror universe right before then, you got to think, wait a minute.
Yeah, this is a little fishy.
Yeah, and since I've been there, you were saying like the lower rank and file, because they've been there in the mirror universe for a while, and then they get back and she's immediately there. It'd be kind of like, so has she been hiding this whole time if she's regular?
If they really wanted to sell, they should have had a shuttle just dock like at Hale. Like, oh, I just happened to come out with the met you guys here in space. What a weird thing.
Well, they almost have to bring it up because if she is allowed to walk around, they need to have some kind of cover story. But I was, I was just thinking as she walked up, I'm like, wait, if she just does walk around freely and not confined to her cabin, they're going to have to make up some story, because then otherwise people will be like, who's that?
Yeah.
What is she doing here? I made a side comment that I like how her sharp, angular bob hair is nice, long, and curly now, that I'm like, so they have a hairstylist to help them in their transformation.
Look, if they have a machine that can create food by request, you can probably get
have
extensions.
Have a cosmetics one, No, that makes sense.
Exactly. Like, I would like a stylish mirror universe goatee. Can I get that? And you just have it applied.
Mm-hmm.
Only because I liked it so much, I want to go back to the scene with the Admiral and the Rel, because I missed this quote that I took. She just explains the fundamental problem is that Klingons have tasted your blood.
Oh, yes.
Conquer us, or we will never relent. And that's exactly why they need Giorgio, because she just doesn't look at the world the way that anyone in Starfleet does. And I really liked the fact that she wanted to speak with Sarek. And that was, again, another moment that I wasn't expecting in the episode, was like, oh, we're going to, have a cool, deep conversation with Sarek and Giorgio, who are essentially Burnham's parents, just, different universes, different Burnhams. And I think she just realizes that she needs to appeal to the alien and, not Starfleet. I think she has enough of an understanding of Starfleet, because as we saw in the Mirror Universe, she had kind of contempt for everything about Starfleet. So she knew that their approach isn't really going to get the job done. It could be a quick fix. You can put a little Band-Aid on the Klingon problem.
I'm not going to change anything.
But whatever Sarek got sent off to do was just because, look, do you want this to work? So,
well, I mean, and Sarek has said that he's willing to do that. I mean, he's the whole one that told Burnham about the Vulcan hello.
Mm-hmm.
That started this whole series off on the path that it is. So he, of anybody involved with the series at this point, would be like, all right, I understand we got to do something, a show of force necessary up front to be able to save a lot more lives further down the road.
And so from that is basically where we get this idea that they're going to attack the Klingon homeworld, which is Kronos. It's spelled Quonos. I had the closed captioning on when I was watching it, so it's with the Q, and but it's Kronos. So they did a good job explaining it. I'm still not convinced that materializing in underground caves is really like, oh yeah, that's how you're going to attack the Klingon homeworld and basically try and take them out when you have one starship. That's really my question. Is I mean, look, it's all they got. You know, it's, well, to use a metaphor on Super Bowl Sunday, it's the Hail Mary. It's all they have. Mm-hmm. This is all they can do. Let's go ahead and try it. What did you think of the explanation, Frank? Is it one of those ones where you're like, all right, in the universe, you know, in the reality that is Star Trek, this explanation seems like it would be plausible?
Well, I mean, given what they have at this point, I mean, certainly they brought back the science. They have the spore technology and the spore drive science, but they've shown that it is not a long-term solution for traveling a lot of distances. But the idea of even trying to, I think they're some way away from either installing that on other Starfleet vessels. So it's not a quick fix, even, and their fleet is pretty much diminished as well. So
yeah.
Given
the
fact
that they have to grow this whole network again, I feel like, yeah, I mean, it's probably just going to be a one-ship operation at this point. They just don't have the time to try to do anything on a larger scale.
Yeah.
The planet seemed to be grow the mycelium fine, though.
Yeah, so
moon,
that was the one time when it seems like they spent money in the episode, mm-hmm. which was, you know, it was kind of a cool thing that, you know, it's just like, yeah, let's just grow a bunch of spores really fast.
Sure.
Let's terraform
this
moon. Yeah, right. So, kids at home, if you want to try that, just all you need to is find a vacant moon, get some just do what they did in the episode. It'll be great.
But it felt very Rathacon-esque in terms of the Genesis planet when they're transforming that planet.
Yes.
But also, I feel like this is a great way to close the whole thing on the spore drive. You blow up that planet, that's where all the spores are left in this universe. So that's an easy way to completely close the book on using the spore drive as a viable form of travel.
Yeah, and how it doesn't come up ever again, at least not for, what's the stretch? Is it like 80, 90 years between this and where we are in, quote unquote, you know, the latest stories told?
I think it's longer. Isn't it? I think it's
over 100. Happen after Star Trek Nemesis?
There's
like Deep Space Nine episodes or Voyager episodes?
There's a couple IDW comic series that tie into the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek.
Okay.
They kind of set up what happened to
Abrams. Oh, and how we have Ambassador Spock
yes.
that ends up in the J.J. verse.
Yeah, so it kind of sets up the destruction of Romulus.
Essentially, we don't have any stories
set
there. Anyway, so that's why we haven't seen it yet. And I don't know. I just feel like at some point there's going to be a modern story like, let's try and use the spore drive now. I don't know why nobody's tried to use it for 90 years.
Although, so. I guess like that, I assume they'd probably keep the spore drive contained within the Mirror Universe technology as well, because that's pretty an easy way to access that universe. So if they wanted to destroy any of that information, you know, I would imagine, unless those people, anybody on board of the Discovery, wrote that down somewhere else. Then once they died, it was kind of lost everybody.
Here's something great for hardcore Star Trek fans. Wellington Smith, Genesis Project from Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan, equals Spore Drive, ... Mind blown. I think that the sort of terraforming that we saw in this episode is not entirely dissimilar than the Genesis planet. But as we saw in Star Trek III, it didn't really work very well. So we should hope that this is done better. But I like the comparison. It was not something I thought about when I was watching the episode. So
David Marcus, man, he had to cheat. You know?
Yeah.
That's what happens.
That's the problem. he's too much like his father.
That's right. Except in the fighting department. Didn't get any of that.
Although, you know, he sort of had the curly hair. Late Kirk, like movie Kirk had curly hair somehow.
Mm-hmm. So
young
great.
Kirk never had curly hair, but
Kirk that did. That was weird.
In the future, men's hair perms as they age.
Look, he might have gotten a perm.
I don't know. You got some hair growing on. Your hair's a little short right now. Go get your perms.
No problem. So basically, the Emperor makes it clear that what she wants is her freedom. And, you know, at least Sarek seems to be willing to offer that. So I don't quite know where the Admiral weighs in on that. But that's sort of how we get this elaborate plan that we, in theory, are going to see next week, which is, you know, she's going to basically be the captain. And
I'd be curious about her motivations, because certainly going back to the Terran universe, I mean, given that the whole reason she was willing to die because she had, she's shown her neck.
Yeah.
So she's not going to be welcome back as the Emperor over there. But in this universe, I don't know if you can go full Emperor mode this way, because there's too many people that would want it. You could easily get taken out. So,
oh, yeah.
How do you blend it?
Yeah, like what does she want to do? I mean, she should, you know, have no expectation that she would be an officer of Starfleet, and it's probably not something that she would want. So, yeah, what does she want to do? I mean, is she like a bounty hunter? You know,
or does she enjoy the chaos?
Possibly. I mean, just
or at least causing chaos in this other space.
Yeah,
like her space, she probably is like, all right, order in this one.
Yeah, just has has a ship for hire.
Yeah,
you know. I mean,
she's captain again. Makes her feel good.
That's true. That definitely. Well,
actually, I wouldn't mind seeing her in future seasons, almost becoming like another like Mud-esque character, where maybe once or twice a season we see her pop up for something, and then she takes off and does something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it'd be great to see her in a way where maybe she doesn't love everybody, but I don't want her to be like a nemesis for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like where she just feels like she's been done wrong in some way. And you feel like there's some affinity for even this Burnham, who there was an interesting turn of phrase where she calls her daughter, but not my daughter.
Yes.
I liked that. So I would like to see this develop in some way where it's not this, you know, she's like this villain that turns up every once in a while, you know? I mean, even if she doesn't want to give anybody a hug, that's fine, you know? There's no hugging in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, as soon as she showed up on the bridge, I was like, no. Nobody's going to buy it. I mean, they're going to visually buy it, but as soon as if they talk with her, because unless she's an amazing study, I don't know how she's going to, like, mimic the other one.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, luckily she should recognize the crew. I was thinking that. I'm like, well, at least she should recognize them.
Yeah, that's a good point. She should know a lot of people are, yeah.
But how they react to her and her initial, like, ugh, like, grossed out by the niceness or the, you know, just a different personality traits of them. I just think her poker face is going to be like, you know, just flinch every time. Just be like, no.
She'll have some degree of contempt for anyone who's non-human.
Yeah.
You know, so I feel like that's going to really take a lot.
Or they go and they like flinches or something that will just still be like, what's your problem?
Well, one of the other big storylines throughout the course of the episode was indeed sort of Tyler, who at least as far as we can tell was full Tyler in this episode. And I don't know that I entirely buy that Vok is gone. But it was definitely
lingering effects.
Yeah,
he might be gone.
I think there were some great interactions, as we mentioned. Sort of, you know, everybody wants to be his friend at the commissary. Mm-hmm. I really liked the exchange. It was brief. The exchange he had with Lieutenant Stamets, which was, you know, asking to make sure he felt terrible about it, and he conceded that he did, and he's like, well, then, you know, you may be human after all, you know, which I thought was like, that's actually a great way to put it. But we do finally get the scene with Burnham and Tyler that we're sort of building to in the whole episode.
Yeah. Sorry, real quick before that, though, I'd like this point, too. Beavers in the chat says she is Philippa, she has the emotional intelligence to rule an empire. I bet she can fake it till she makes it for an episode. I'm like, but
she did it for a little while, but you never know.
But I mean, Burnham did, but I feel these people would notice on this one more. Like, they would notice the lack of kindness and gentleness.
When you're used to whatever you say, people do.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there are enough people on the bridge of Discovery who served under Georgiou.
Yeah.
I mean, she was never actually captain of the Discovery, but now it's like, okay, now she's captain.
Yeah. You know?
I guess I'm of two minds with Tyler, because one, I could see them easily setting it with the season finale next week, that he's going to make the noble sacrifice to show to everybody, you know, I'm human after all, and then dies. But so there's one way they could set that up, but I don't know if the more interesting choice would be to have him kind of live with us and try to reconcile and continue on still living and seeing how he kind of navigates life you know, and try to figure out who he really is. I think that might be more interesting.
Maybe.
I feel like I've seen too many of the person that's trying to prove to everybody, no, I'm still this, and sacrificing themselves, and everybody goes like, you know, at the end, when it mattered most, he was human. Like, I've seen that too many times. I might be more interested in the other side.
Side note, he's in Commuter.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. He's in something else.
William Neeson movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's one of the passengers. And then there's some other movie I saw him in, too. He's on an episode of Black Mirror.
Oh, nice.
So I was like, hey, he gets around.
He does get around.
He's done a few random things. Yeah, I hope they don't do that. But I know what you mean exactly. Of like, well, in the end he was. And you're like, well, good thing you can't tell him now.
But I did like at least they didn't go the full full thing where they had everybody ostracize him from the crew.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he's a cute boy. Renji just goes, I don't know why, but I thought it was weird. There was just all the female crew hanging out with him.
There was one guy. Yeah. There was one guy.
There's one guy. There's two girls and one guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, another bro came over.
Let's have a brew. Yeah. But you're right. And, you know, it took Tilly at first and then people added to it. So added to the little crowd there.
Yes.
So there was a good question, and we sort of asked the same thing. What do we think Mary Universe Giorgio's endgame is? We're not really sure, but Rainbow Wyvern says that Mary Giorgio is going to do something evil and have to be killed. I believe that is very likely, but I would like the character. You know, again, it's another door to leave open. I like some of these mirror characters running around.
Yeah.
Or in the case of Prime Lorca. And Anna Black says that the end game is control and power. She's not going to rule the universe, maybe a planet,
somewhere.
Maybe a system, or you know, maybe a city. You know, I don't know. She just wants to have somebody under her thumb / you know, iron fist.
I mean, because I guess there is you could think when she was in the mirror universe, she was willing to sacrifice herself because she thought she was, you know, going to die anyway. So she could be coming in the prime universe saying, "I'm already on borrowed time. I might as well just, you know, do something crazy as I want because I wasn't expected to be alive anyway at this point."
Yeah, and I agree. I like that you pointed that out of just like, she's ready to die anyway, so I don't know why she's just dragging her feet so much of like, who's ready to die?
Maybe.
But now I have this other opportunity, and I think she's like curious enough to want to know more about this world and maybe take over this one kind of idea.
Yeah, or maybe she's just trying to engineer a way that she can just die in a blaze of glory like she expected to. Mm. You know, she's like, let me just do something big here.
What if she's the sacrifice?
Renji 9998 says maybe Michael will kill Giorgio, and this time on purpose.
Yeah.
And that'd be interesting, a moment where she has to, you know, and she doesn't want to, but you know, we've seen Burnham have to make some tough decisions, and it would be a fitting sort of arc for the whole season if, you know, she causes her death in the second episode, and then she actually like has to kill her again in the 15th episode, the season finale.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so the idea of having a mirror universe Giorgio in the prime universe is kind of interesting just from a storytelling perspective, but then I'm thinking also from a Star Trek perspective where if we're closing everything up, where the mirror universe is supposed to be an unknown element, does she need to die because we want to close off any possibility of anybody ever discovering about the mirror universe before it's found out in the original series.
You're probably right, and Beaver says Blaze of Glory sounds about right, so let's see. We'll know just a week from today.
Yeah.
We'll know whether or not that's what ends up happening.
Well, the interesting thing is, like, cause I think we all assume Giorgio is not going to be the captain, regardless if she is alive or dead. She still won't be the captain of the Discovery.
No.
Do you think it would be Saru, or do you think they'll find, for the second season, they'd find, assuming they continue on the same current timeline, they don't do any time jumps, like another big-name actor to become the captain?
I think that, I mean, Saru has proven himself, but it would sort of be, you know, we've seen instances throughout the history of Star Trek of Starfleet bureaucracy. They might just be like, no, this is the kind of captain we need, and it's going to be the bad fit. But that would be the sort of story you'd want to tell in season two. And yeah, you're right, sort of a recognizable name actor.
Yeah.
You know?
A random theory here by Clark in the chat. The rapid growth spores could be unstable and cause a time reset accidentally and correct the canon timeline. I like that theory.
All right.
That's a nice blanket fix it all, but I like that.
That fixes some of the issues that Frank and I talked about the first couple weeks of this show, of Star Trek Weekly. So, Wellington Smith says it better be Saru as captain. So,
you need an alien captain.
All right, Ghost World has a whole theory. This is how it'll happen. Giorgio will kill many Klingons on the planet for revenge in them eating her, although she doesn't know that they, but it's all right. Then Saru will kill Giorgio for revenge in eating him. Now, see, I like that. I'm sorry that I interjected in the middle because it was clearly thought out and very funny. And Rainbow Wyvern says that Saru should be captain because we need an alien captain.
Yeah.
So,
and he's, like you said, he has proven himself worthy.
Yeah,
he's doing a good job.
I think, especially the adaptability and sort of the growth that we saw there.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, as we're warping into Starbase One, we see him with his threat ganglia
yeah.
coming out. But I like even as because I know he expressed it that it could happen even at vast distances. But they're traveling at warp, so I mean that's still pretty far away. That it was already coming out. I was impressed about that. But
yeah. I saw it's not going to be there.
Yeah, I was like, then don't pull out a warp. I was waiting for him to kind of like, nope, let's not pull out a warp.
Yeah, because
I feel like that's the smart thing to do.
If you're gonna, you know, end up,
he's like ignoring it. He's like, shh.
Yeah, he's like, everything's cool. Just chill out. There was a nice shout out late in the episode to Captain Archer going to Kronos nearly 100 years ago, which you know, is always important that we get those sort of things, you know, just buttoned down in there, you know, that you mention the history of Star Trek stories past.
Well, it's been a long road getting from there to here.
Yeah, no, that's true. I know.
Any chance to quote that?
I actually forgot. Took me a second. It has been a long run.
Yes. That's from the theme song for Enterprise.
Which is not a great song.
No.
No.
Would you rather listen to that or listen to this theme song?
This is better.
Yeah. Because it doesn't have any words.
It just doesn't have words.
Oh, yeah. They're starting to sing it too.
That's right. And Wellington Smith agrees. Props for the Enterprise shout out. we have a few minutes here. So we have the season finale next week. We have episode 15. Would you like to go first, Frank, and sort of predict what you would like to see? Not like, oh, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
What you think would be a great ending for what, by my estimation, has been a very good season of Star Trek storytelling?
I mean, it's... which it's never going to be, because with Brian Fuller stepping away, and that was one of the reasons that he did, that he wanted an anthology series, and CBS did not want that. I mean, in an ideal world, I would love if they followed closer to his version, because it'd be cool to be able to just focus on another time period of Starfleet until...
If each year, you know, I mean, you could get sort of the future, the post-Star Trek Nemesis that we're talking about, we'd like to see, but then you could also get, you know, some in-between times, you know, I mean... there hasn't been anything that we've seen visually. I know that there were novels and comics, but the time period after the end of the original series and before the motion picture, you know, there's some gaps in there. There's some things that we could see. And there's still plenty of stories to be told between the end of, the first part of Generations and before Encounter at Farpoint, you know. So there's also like a long stretch that we could see. So what you would like to see is them wrap up this story, and then season two, they move on to something else.
Yeah, because I don't know if there's... I mean, certainly the characters here are... There's some good characters, and there's some just kind of like whatever characters, but I don't know if there's anybody like that really compelling that it's like, I want to continue with these characters another season.
It's a great point. I feel like some of these characters have kind of gone through a whole arc where, like, Lieutenant Stamets has been a good character, but I sort of feel like, all right, we've kind of run the gamut on him. You know, we've seen some changes in him, where do you go from here with him? And, well, Cadet Tilly, at some point she's got to be an ensign, right? I mean, she can't be a cadet forever.
Yeah.
Well, what about having more feature on some of the people are essentially glorified extras? Like, they don't really get lines. Or some of them were like, oh, they finally are talking now. Like, I'd want to know more about those characters. Like, some of the other ones I've been on periphery, like, maybe there'll be something else with them.
Yeah, no, it's true. I think that there is a lot more that we could see. I don't want some kind of convoluted cliffhanger. It can be an interesting cliffhanger, but sometimes you'll watch a show and you feel like the cliffhanger, you're like, they didn't really figure out where that's going to go. They just like, oh, I want to be so cool that this happens. And then season two, this has happened for dramas, this has happened for comedies, this has happened for, you know, genre shows, just regular shows, and then they have to undo the big surprise at the end. And then you're like, oh, yeah, we really, really didn't think that out. So I think that it'd be cool to, you know, and they can leave some doubt if this mission has succeeded. Mm-hmm. And then we can worry about that until 2019 when it's expected that, you know, the show won't come back until then. I want some kind of, we could get a satisfying sense of closure where it then is like, okay, now we're going to open the door on this new thing that happens, which is crazy. And it builds the buzz for season two. But just don't go too crazy. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, there's been, I mean, this first season has been very Burnham focused because she's basically our point of view character for the series. Season two, I know they said in an article that they want to try to get back to the more of the original series where it's actually Discovery. We're doing away missions and things like that, which would make me think that it's not going to be as Burnham focused because to do those types of stories, I feel like you got to be able to spread the storytelling focus around.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to see more of it that, or have you liked it being more focused on one particular character and their journey?
I think, go ahead, Karen.
I like how it's been kind of a mix of both. Like, there are some episodes that featured one character and other ones, like, shifted. But it'd be nice if they did individual episodes and then more ensemble and, you know, did a blend of it.
Yeah, you know, and in a couple weeks, one of the things we're going to do is we're going to look back at the whole season and we'll talk about our favorite episodes and favorite stories. And for me, one of the ones that stands out was the episode that was a lot more Saru-focused. I feel like from that point onward, we've understood him a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'd like to see more of that. I'm sure that they'll probably lean on Burnham a lot, you know. I mean, just in the same way that, like, the main crew was always the focus, whichever Star Trek series it was. Just, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, you're going to get, you know, you're going to have an Odo episode of Deep Space Nine, that sort of thing. So I think that it would make sense if they kind of spread the wealth a little bit more, you know, because this has really been Burnham's arc. This is her story. She started this war with the Klingons. She's trying to end it, as she said. So let's see if she succeeds.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, I feel like the longer if it stayed in this with Burnham as a character, I feel like the longer it goes on, the more you'd want to see some interaction with Spock. Just to be able to validate that, would you want to see them, like, cast another Spock? Or would you say, like, hey, Zachary Quinto, get in here and do an episode for us, and we'll just assume you are prime Spock?
He did TV before.
Honestly, he doesn't do that much else right now.
Other than Star
Trek.
Not very busy, so.
And if you read, I mean, he got paid so little to do the Star Trek movies, unlike Chris Pine. So you might want to do it. But that was actually one of the thoughts that I had. Would in season two, would you like to see some characters from the original series, not necessarily Kirk, but, you know, maybe 10 years younger Scotty or, you know,
maybe that could be cool.
I think it'd be interesting, but I know you start to run into problems when you start doing that sort of thing. Would you like to see that, Frank, or does that feed into the whole thing of how you don't like revisiting this time period?
I feel like probably the only character I'd want to see is Spock, because I feel like that's one that
at least makes sense to Burnham's story. Yeah.
And Burnham has been inserted into that history in such a way that I feel like I want to see how those two interact in some fashion. I don't want to read about it just in a novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like it becomes more canon if it's actually something that is televised or, you know, as shown.
Well, I mean, and Gene Roddenberry himself had pretty strict rules that the movies and TV shows were Star Trek fact, and then the novels and comic books were Star Trek fiction. So in his estimation, kind of none of it counted.
But that
would definitely be interesting. I feel like it's one of those things where if you did like a Scotty cameo, where he's like in a scene and they run into him and he's, you know, it's a couple minutes, that probably, it would be fun. But then if you have like a whole episode with him, then you start to feel like, well, you're sort of redefining who he is when we meet him, you know, 10 years later. So,
I mean, I feel like at least the J.J. Abrams movies has opened the door to recasting those iconic roles and not having the audiences go like, what are you doing?
Yeah, no, that's true. We were already, you know, conditioned to seeing different actors playing it. And Rainbow Wyvern does point out it's already been set up that we're going to see Spock. I think that that's the sort of thing that there would be excited about. I mean, you know, you can argue semantics a little bit, but Spock would be one of the most popular characters in Star Trek, if not the. If you think about all the different things he's appeared in, you know, I mean, there's the great episodes of Next Generation. He's in the first two J.J. Abrams movies. So I feel as though we are getting close to seeing that next year. And Clark Stark points out that Chris Duhon has played a young Scotty in fan films.
Nice.
And I literally just saw that a couple days ago. I didn't see the film itself. So we'll see. And Wellington Smith, very excited for pre-original Spock. Yes, 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 yes. That's four yeses. And
But if he does show up, I want him for the uniform with the cage.
Absolutely.
With a great, I agree. The great mustard turtleneck. Yeah, yes.
We should definitely get that. Anyway, so we are just about out of time. Thanks so much for everybody in the chat. It always helps add to the conversation. And if you are watching the archive version of this or listening to the archive version of this on iTunes, please comment and like. Where do they do that, Carrie?
You comment down below.
That's right. Right here on YouTube. or on the iTunes page or Apple Podcasts or whatever they call these things these days. So that's where you would do all that. And we will be back next week with wrapping up season one of Star Trek Discovery. And in a few weeks, we're going to start diving into some other topics. We're going to visit the Mirror Universe. But we'll talk about that next week. We'll let you know everything that you need to do. Well, Smith says, Frank, Chris, and Carrie, you guys are the best. I wasn't going to read any more comments, but then that guy said, we're the best. That's Yay. The best kind of comments, that we're the best. Anyway.
Thank you.
Thank you all. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. And you can find Carrie and I tomorrow night on Marvel TV Weekly at 7 Pacific, 10 Eastern, right here at AfterBuzz TV.
And then besides that, you can find me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's KARIDLANE. Thank you for watching.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. I'm going to predict season finale goes, I'm going to say the full hour. I'm going to say full hour.
Well, this one was 55 minutes, so we were getting close. I think you're right. Full hour. That's a good prediction. And hugs all around.
All right.
Yay. And long live the Empire, Clark Stark. I don't know if I'm going to agree with that one. That's like almost like throwing like a Heil Hitler there.
That's
in the
right.
So I don't know about long live the Empire, but we like you, Clark Stark. Anyway, thanks so much, everyone. And we will see you next week. And live long and prosper.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.